better sustainable use of materials is key to moving the agenda on the climate emergency and making better informed decision and having a lower impact, more equitable economy and quality of life.
Welcome to today's podcast from the Real Circularity Coalition, an international campaign to promote and create a real circular economy. I'm Liz Jetchy, Head of Research at Higginson Strategy and Project Manager of the Real Circularity Coalition, a campaign created to push the circular economy to the forefront of both the political and business landscape. These podcasts are part of our quest to bring together business leaders, international activists, politicians, and thought leaders who are abandoning the take, make, and waste economy and accelerating the transition to the real circular economy. Today, we are lucky enough to be joined by Sam Reeve, CEO of Resource Futures. Resource Futures works with clients across public, private, and non-profit sectors to enable the positive management of material resources. Sam has been working in the field of resource efficiency and circular economy for over a decade now, and is an expert in all things circular. Sam, welcome to the Behind the Story podcast. Tell us about yourself.
Thank you for that introduction. It's always strange to hear someone else describing how long you've been working in the field. It makes me feel older than hopefully I'm looking and being. I'm Sam. I'm CEO of Resource Futures, as you say, a consultancy focused on sustainable material resource management. So it's great to be here. As you say, am I an expert in all things circular? I certainly deal with all things circular every day, you know, and I'm sure we'll cover the topic of circularity as that's the topic, and sustainability and things. But yeah, that's what we do as a business. We're trying to help our clients make better decisions, take better actions all around using material better and more sustainably in it's a journey that we go on with our clients and things. So it's nice to have the opportunity to share some of our thinking and some of our experiences with you.
Brilliant. And so talk me through your sustainability journey.
I've always had an interest in the environment, you know, and that does go back to my kind of time at school and things. I naturally levitated towards those geography topics, and I find it really interesting that impact that we as humans have on the environment, and that wasn't always a positive impact. So I studied environmental science as my undergraduate degree. I was lucky enough to go on and do a postgrad in environmental impact assessment, and that really focused in, I suppose, academically on sustainability and the three pillars of sustainability, and how, when we're looking at how we're going to, I suppose, earn our living and do business and make policy, it's not all about money, actually. And there are these other pillars of, you know, the impact on society and the impact on the environment. And that always has just seemed common sense to me, if I'm honest. I guess just that chimes with how I suppose, my personal view of the world. I was lucky enough after my postgrad master's to get a job in central government and I'm going to give away my age even more here, as it was then, the Department of Environment, Transport and Regions. So those of you that can Google, you'll start aging me. But I worked within the sustainability team there on the very first ever Green Minister's report, which was all focused on internally how all the government departments are integrating kind of the environment and considering the environment in their policies. Really interesting just to see how that was. And then from there, I moved into local government and I had a job at a county council, again, in the sustainability field. And I actually was working within a county council on what was called a sustainability forum. And what that did is that brought together public sector parts of the local authorities and the county council. It was a two-tier county council, brought together businesses, local businesses, and it also brought together community groups, all with that vested interest on looking to take positive actions to improve the quality of life of the residents in the county. And that was, again, really interesting to see that interplay of the need to collaborate. And a lot of those actual projects that I was involved in were very environmentally focused back then, whether that was energy or waste. But then it also brought in things like social housing and the need for equality in that, and tied into work. And then kind of stumbled into waste. I think very few people possibly set out in their career thinking, I am going to rummage through bins and think waste and think policy. But that's actually how my career in specifically in waste, as it did start back in the early 2000s, was I got a job with one of the founding companies that formed Resource Futures Network Recycling, it was called, and I was a waste analysis site manager. And that is probably as exactly as it sounds. It involved going around all over the UK, collecting samples of waste, mainly on behalf of local authorities, and sorting through it, and then being able to report on what that composition was. And what that, when I say instantly, I mean instantly, kind of after my first week on site, I was like, there's a massive issue here. We were looking at residual waste, we're looking at recycling, we're looking at organic collections, looking at HWRC waste. And what was clear was all the great work that was being done, and even back then in the early 2000s, but also just the sheer variety and volume of all these things that we weren't currently dealing with. We didn't know what we were trying to manage. And then I've just been lucky enough to be promoted through the company and things, but it's always been that interest in making a difference. The work that I wanted to do, as we all do, it's this, I suppose, we call it purpose now, don't we? We talk a lot about purpose. I think back then that I don't think that was really in the discourse as a thing, but I knew I wanted to feel like my job was making a difference with that environmental focus. So that's, and then 5 years ago in 2016, there was a transition from, as I say, Jane Stevenson, the former CEO. I'd been effectively her number two within the business as operations director. And I was lucky enough that the board and the employees, because we're an employee-owned business, were happy that I put my name forward. And then I took over 5 years ago. So that's my journey. And I genuinely, we all have tough days, particularly over the last year, and we'll probably touch on that, won't we? COVID and things. But I love my job. I love the people I work with across the sector. And, it was certainly very busy still.
Oh, how interesting, Sam. You've had a really interesting journey in your sustainability life. And so you must see so many changes in terms of the term waste going from resources and all these definitions. And how do you think the resource conversation can tie into the climate change conversation? When we talk about climate change, it's related to sort of renewables and energy efficiency, but you don't really hear the conversation geared towards circular economy. How can we get this conversation going with how circular economy can impact on the climate change?
Yeah, it has changed a lot. I mean, Liz, from your kind of time in the sector as well. I think the one comment I would add before I maybe try and give some thoughts on the particular question is, I think that pace of change, from my personal view, that pace of change has particularly been really rapid, probably in the last 5 years. And that ties in, partly to, our friend David Attenborough and the plastics kind of issues that he's highlighted, and the climate emergency. But in terms of the resource management issue and how that ties into the climate emergency, I mean, they're integrally linked. We know that it's really important that we always remind ourselves we work in this bubble. We're converted. We understand that. I think it's about the fact that this is it's such a multifaceted challenge that the climate emergency brings us, that there's not one silver bullet. As you say, whether that's renewables or transport or material use and all of that. But material use is really important within that. And I think the topic of circularity, circular economy, I know it's not only 5 years old, but it's got the traction in the last 5 years, and it's definitely all tied together. But the climate emergency is around carbon. It's a key thing there, and your material use and the materials you're using, you know, from extraction through to manufacturing to use to end of life, and looking to maintain, you know, that value of materials. It all links through there. Your decisions about your material use impact those. I think we as a business, I suppose myself as a person, what we're trying to support and facilitate is behavioral change. Now, that can be at the individual level, it could be at organizational level, it can be at a government level. We as a business, that's our core, that's our, you know, our vision is a sustainable world. So I think the important thing is that we're all pushing in the same direction. And I think that's the important thing, that the actions that we are taking are pushing in the same direction, which is the direction of sustainability, circularity. But it's absolutely key. Material, better sustainable use of materials is key to moving the agenda on the climate emergency and making better informed decision and having a lower impact, more equitable economy and quality of life.
That's so interesting. Yes, really interesting. And we've got the COP26 rather coming up in November. What one thing would you ask the politicians to be looking at to help us move ahead with this agenda?
There's a question. I think collaboration is key, isn't it? And, you know, off of the previous meetings and things, that's been at the heart, because the climate emergency is a global problem. And I suppose, so action is important. I think that's what people want to see. They want to see actions. And by people, just to find, I suppose, who I'm including that within my world, I think that's within the resources sector, that is that end-to-end value chain. People want to take action, I think, now, generally. And so I think it has to be about collaboration, and it has to be also, I think there's an issue, there's a block here, a barrier, which is acknowledged and known about, but I think is also slightly, not left behind exactly, that would be unfair, but data. There is this issue with, we are talking about materials and managing materials, and yet there is that fundamental point about the data on understanding what's where, how much, who owns it, what quality it is really problematic. It's a huge part of our business is trying to fill in those data gaps, which I suppose from a sustainability prism, I'm actually striving to fill that gap and evolve what we do, because we shouldn't be spending time and charging, you know, clients time and money to do that. It should be, that data and that knowledge should be easily accessible for all, so that we're all making better informed decisions. And then you start dealing with the bigger problems, because there's this journey to circularity it's not an overnight thing. It's for the generation, you know, that we're starting now. So I think it's action, I think it's collaboration, and I think it's this issue of data and how we really, from a materials perspective, get a handle on that, so that we know what's where.
Oh, interesting. And so could you talk a bit more about your work with Resource Futures? You talk about data. What other things are you looking at, and how does it work?
Yeah, so as I say, we're a consultancy. How we work in terms of just, we're slightly different. We're not unique. We're employee owned, which is a really interesting kind of business structure, and we're non-profit distributing. So we're a profit-focused business, but what we do, and even though we're employee-owned, we as members of the business don't get financial dividends. So that profit we reinvest back into the business. So that's interesting, because it gives us some options on the type of work we can do. So as you say, we work across the public, private and non-profit sectors, and we are doing a range of work from your very technical policy kind of impact assessment work, that we will do with national governments. That policy work will also be useful for some of our private customers in looking at the impact that those policies may have on them and how they can adapt to it and the opportunities that they may have. We do a lot of work on the kind of waste and resources management and infrastructure. And so that's from how your waste and my waste is collected by our local authority. So we do a lot of kind of options appraisals and efficiency studies on that. We do a lot of material flow assessments so that not only are collections as efficient and as easy to use as possible, but they're forever improving. And, you know, we also have a behavior change team looking at communications, and a lot of their work will be around kind of that interface between collection system and residents. We do a lot of work with business around circular economy and transition into circular economy business models. And that can be, again, from an initial kind of work with the business on just understanding where they are currently within that transition and understanding what the opportunities are. And I think also we quite often identify lots of really positive things they're already doing, which tick circularity boxes. And I think that's always really important to remember, that very few businesses are starting from what someone might call ground zero or state. You know, there's that, you know, business wants to be efficient. And ultimately, sustainability, circularity in one guise is about efficiency and using your materials. It's about, I suppose, the expansion on the circular thing is around maintaining that value of the materials in the wider economy once it's left that business. And then finally, I think in terms of the type of work we do, we have a team we call community impact team. And that's where we have actual projects on the ground where we employ direct members of staff to run programs. So we have an education program where we're going into schools, environmental, sustainable focused kind of assemblies and classrooms and workshops. We run a Real Nappies campaign for a local authority. We have a national network of schemes which are collecting unused paint. It's called Community Repaint. We work with Axe and Abel, Dulux Paints, on that. And then we also have a huge evidence gathering team, unsurprisingly, with my previous comment on data. So we actually still, as I commented, I started doing waste composition work. We still have a significant team that are doing kind of, I suppose, work not just in the UK now. We are actually branching out and doing more composition work outside of the UK to fill this data gap of actually understanding what waste is where and what's its quality. And that's a really interesting part of the business too.
That's really interesting. Data seems to be the new sort of in thing within all sectors. Could you talk to me a bit more about, you know, this data issue? What's driving this need?
I think as I was working through climbing and being promoted through the Resource Futures, one of my jobs was actually overseeing the waste evidence team. And I even back then, and this is going back a decade or so, Liz, even back then I used to say, it feels wrong. It feels inefficient, I guess that's the better word. It feels inefficient for the sector to have to come to a private company to pay us to go and do a study to understand all the waste they're collecting so that they can then improve their services. Surely there's a way that service is needed, and this is, I suppose, the link in with the circular economy, the service of understanding what's in the waste stream is needed. How it was being procured was the inefficiency, because even in a circular economy, this data point is you need to know what is where. That's really important. And I think the reason data is becoming more as a critical piece on the agenda is because the policies are evolving. And when you have things like, so, you know, coming from things like the circular economy package and the Green Deal within Europe, and then obviously within the UK right now, we off of the resources and waste strategy with all the consultations around deposit return schemes and the renewed and improved EPR and collection consistency. Actually, when you look at again, this is my, when you look at the heart of those, the thread, that golden thread that runs through, is understanding what's where. So that's why data's coming up the agenda, combined with, I think, the hugely fast moving pace of digitization and what you can do digitally with collecting, storing, analyzing, presenting data. So I think there's that really good coming together of these factors, which is highlighting this issue of what's a good example. So let's take the extended producer responsibility consultation, which is currently in there, which will have a generational impact on how packaging is viewed, from its design to how it's collected to how it's then either reused or recycled. The obvious question is, everyone's now asking, is, well, how much of that type of packaging is there and how is it currently being managed? And there is good-ish information from, particularly on household waste. You know, that's been very well studied. It's not a whole picture across the country, but it's a good picture. But what we are currently doing a piece of work with CFLEX, the European Flexible Plastic Packaging group. And that study is the granularity people are now asking is that we're working with them to understand the polymers of all the different flexible packaging that you and I bring home from when we go food shopping. So, you know, it's the closures on our tray of tomatoes, if we buy tomatoes in that form. We're working with them to understand what all the different polymers and, you know, your bread bags and your salad bags and all of those things. That's the level of granularity now. And it highlights that, well, what is it and how do we fill that in a really efficient, cost-effective, transparent way. Which is hugely exciting from a professional basis. I think at the same time, it's a very big challenge. It's a completely solvable challenge. I don't want to come across as at all as that. It's absolutely solvable, but it's, for me, it's a key success factor to how circular, how quickly, you know, the UK economy, the global economy becomes, is this question of data.
That's really interesting. And what's the contrast between your work with the public sector and private? That you've seen many changes over your journey. Is there a big contrast from when you're working with public and the private sector clients?
I think there's a huge amount of overlap in the work we do, which is, I think, is a good thing, because this is the challenge is the same. Obviously, so I think with our public sector work, it ranges from that policy scale work, and we do, you know, that's not just UK, that's global policy work where we're looking at, you know, we do a lot of work in low and middle income countries, and that ranges and it's very different there, because we take for granted here in the UK that we all get a waste collection and it's well legislated and controlled, and that's not the case globally. You know, there's some great work by, you know, people like WasteAid and Tier Fund that, you know, it's I think it's something like 2 billion people don't have a formal waste collection and things. So that type of policy work is really interesting from a infrastructural kind of, I suppose, long-term perspective of what needs to be in place and how do you get there and what's the steps. It's the same with our private sector businesses. They want to make well-informed decisions. And I think with a lot of the circular economy support we do with businesses, and it ranges from very small startup businesses through to multinationals that are asking these questions and genuinely wanting to engage and make their supply chain and their processes more circular. It's that realization of, again, I'll bring in the word of collaboration. It's the understanding that they they can't solve that problem on their own, no matter how big or small they are. That, you know, it's such an intertwined kind of economy we work in now and life that we live, that you need to bring those players in. And that's great in one sense. At the same time, it inevitably adds complications. It affects speeds, it affects, you know, aligning what everyone is actually trying to get from those work. So I think it's about the differences. There is a need for action on both sides, and I include by both I mean the private and public, but, you know, not forgetting our non-profit work, is that they want action. I think that pace of action changes, and that's not a binary one is fast and one is slow. I think they interchange depending on those issues. But what is clear is, again, my personal view is people want action. You hit the block then is what they realize is, how good is that data? I come back to data and, you know, making those informed decisions and that awareness of risk and being aware of what that risk may be or not be. So it's, there's a lot of similarities. It's and we work together with both of them on many projects, actually. So on one project, we'll be working with both, you know, so a lot of our policy work, we end up consulting with public parts of the economy, you know, whether that's a government department or a, you know, a local authority, as well as business, on understanding what the impact of these policies would be.
And what would you say, Sam, is the main barrier for these businesses to become circular economy businesses? What's the main barrier stopping them from doing that?
It's a good question, and I don't think, and I know you're not asking it thinking it's one answer fits all, Liz, at all. I think it obviously does vary. I think this, and this is changing, I think there's this, it comes to this point of the willingness to expose themselves as a business to what is now much greater public scrutiny. And I guess that's another thing which is influencing the change of paces. It's this immediacy of public opinion shifting now that happens through social media. And that's good and bad for a business. I think it, and again, maybe I'm thinking slightly more in the bigger size business here that are exposed to this, but it's that willingness to stick their head above the parapet and say that they're going to take an action when they know possibly, which is always going to be, it's a step. It's not the whole solution, because it can't be the whole solution. And it's that willingness to expose themselves to, I suppose, that brand risk of, oh, you're not doing enough, and, you know, you could be doing this. And I think there's a shift, and each business approaches this differently. But I think that willingness to take that risk, when you look at the complexity of that network that they're dealing with and the pace of change, is that, I think that is a barrier. But my view is, you know, businesses are engaged with the agenda now. They are. And, you know, we work really hard on maintaining our independence. It helps being employee owned, and, you know, we don't have shareholders or anything like this, but we, at the same time, we do, you know, we're about providing that independent research that helps inform decisions. You know, I think people know this with research, which is we're not there to prove a case. We're there to look at a case and see what the evidence tells us the impact may be. And so, you know, that's really important. But the barrier of, I suppose, not being seen to be green enough or circular enough, fast enough, does stop some businesses acting until they, you know, they will be doing a huge amount behind the scenes, but before they go public and launch things. But when you and I will be reading, and the public are, you know, even in the last couple of weeks, with things like the various trials on flexible plastic packaging that some of the supermarkets are running, you know, they're trials. They know they not got everything figured out, but the reason they're doing the trial and launching those campaigns is because they're realizing that that's a really good way to understand how do we maximize the material we're collecting, how is our kind of recovery supply chain and treatment supply chain working, what does it mean for our distribution centers, how is the comms working, where do we put the bins in the store, you know, what type of materials are we getting, how, you know, does this, how does it work financially for the recyclers, all of those things. Ultimately, you can't do that from a desk. So, you know, they have to take those risks. But I think that's something that's changed in the last 5 years. That willingness now is much greater.
That's really interesting. And with this extended producer responsibility and law coming into to force, I guess we'll hear more about circular economy in the mainstream media. Just going back to language, I know you mentioned, Sam, before, but how would you actually describe the real circular economy, Layman?
It's a good question, isn't it? It's so I think so. What the circular economy is about maintaining. For me, it's about maintaining the inherent value of materials. It's and minimizing the use of materials. Actually, I mean, that doesn't mean us. You know, that doesn't mean not producing anything at all. But it's about having a very clear model and process that is the whole value chain for the production of things. And so it's around really informed, smart decisions of materials and then looking to keep those materials in use. But at their highest, as you know it's that utility, you know, the highest utility value of, and so actually, you know, and within the circular economy, it's not all about recycling. In fact, recycling is, I think Walter used these words, didn't he? It's the worst of the best within the prism of circular. It's about prevent waste in the first instance, because what the circular economy is about preventing waste. It's about, you know, having a reusable, you know, he says waving a reusable water bottle across the camera, but it's about having that and being aware of, you know, designing things to last, only, you know, only owning things we need to own. So this is where the experiential thing comes in, and then it's about the sharing economy. So I think it's that, as in that's what it's around. It's not this, you know, we don't, it moves us away from that the linear economy. It's the you know, from the I buy something, I use it, I dispose of it, and it, you know, never shall I worry about it again. So it's understanding the value, everything we kind of use materially has a value, and it's about understanding that value, choosing it wisely, and maintaining that in use in some form, its highest form possible, for as long as possible.
I suppose in terms of businesses and looking at them in 5 years' time, what would you like to see? Where would you like to see the circular economy?
Good question. I think I'd like to see it. It's carried on, you know, with things like the Environment Bill, which we await, and, you know, where it does end up being back for back with what Europe and things are doing. I think where I would like to see it in 5 years is that the circular economy or sustainability or Build Back Better, whichever label it may end up having, is central and is almost a prerequisite to all government policies that are coming out, that there is that consideration. And we will be progressing, I guess, is where I'd like to see it. And so what we will be seeing is the more and more of that change from understanding that we can still have a really good quality of life by experiencing things. So it's the models that you and I will be aware of, you know, that maybe, you know, let's take fashion as an example, the hiring portion of the fashion business, that maybe we hire outfits for those special occasions rather than feeling we have to buy them. And, you know, that there's lots of those businesses already out there, but, you know, we'll, you know, that they will have grown, and that actually that it becomes commonplace that, you know, why would we buy, you know, why would I buy a nice flowery shirt for one night as opposed to rent it for one night, send it back, and someone else, you know, gets to use it. It's that kind of thing, and it becomes, but we won't be finished. I think that's really important. You know, this isn't a 5-year issue strategy. You know, this is a generational, and this, you know, this is just how we need the global economy to operate.
Great. And Sam, is there anything else I've missed out that you feel you should get across to our listeners?
I think in terms of circularity and just why we know is the short answer, but I'm going to give an opinion of something else, which I think is interesting from us as a business. I think it's worth mentioning the B Corp movement. The B Corp movement is a movement of for-profit businesses which believe that you can use business to have a positive impact socially and environmentally. And it clearly also really aligns with circularity. And what that, the reason I mentioned that as maybe one of the closing comments is because it brings together like-minded businesses as well. And when you then bring in their networks as well, it's a really powerful movement of organizations that are in the for-profit sector looking to take action here and work together. So that's really, you know, we are very proud of our kind of accreditation and to that movement and being part of that.
Well, brilliant. Well, thanks, Sam. Well, thanks a lot for your time. I've really enjoyed talking to you today.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me. And, you know, it's always nice to have these slightly wider conversations around some of the more, the bigger issues we deal with on a day to day, isn't it?
Definitely. Keep it real and circular.
We try. We do try.